Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we have another book club. So for our book club this time, we read Marrying the Ketchups by Jennifer Close. So Leanne, do you want to tell us a little bit about Jennifer Close?
Sure. She was born and raised in the Chicago's North Shore, which ties into this book because it's primarily set in the Chicago area. And she wrote a few other books that I think have done well, primarily Girls in White Dresses and The Smart Ones and also The Hopefuls. But Marrying the Ketchups is her most recent release that came out last year. And the reason that I picked it was because I heard about it on Bookstagrammer for the person who runs the SSR podcast, Allie. Can't remember the full handle. And she mentioned it and I liked it because it was called Marrying the Ketchups, which I know is like a restaurant term, and I'm like, I like food, I like restaurants, so why don't we pick this?
I was super excited when you picked this because I'm familiar with like the Chicagoland area a bit, and so to hear about the different neighborhoods and the stereotypes of each neighborhood I thought was pretty fun, especially because she was spot on for pretty much all of them.
What I liked was how nature-y the different neighborhoods sounded, because the two ones that they primarily focused on was Lake Forest and Oak Park. And Lake Forest was very, like, it seemed like it was kind of stuffy, like a lot of money vibes. And they kind of had a lot of tension with Oak Park, and they were kind of throwing a lot of shade at Oak Park.
Yeah, I feel like the descriptions of the neighborhoods were very good. I think that when she described Lake Forest as you would have these extravagant birthdays for six-year-olds, I think it really went to show exactly what the neighborhood feel would be like. And from what I've heard, I don't think I've ever been to Lake Forest, but from what I've heard, that is very much the stereotype that is around the Chicagoland area, is that Lake Forest is where a lot of old money is, and it's a very, like, hoity-toity place.
I think we can table this for when we talk more about the characters, but Mike's embodiment of the whole Lake Forest vibe, there's a lot to say about that.
Oh my gosh, yes. Hate Mike. I don't like him at all. But that's, we'll get to that in a bit. And then in terms of the Oak Park stereotypes, I feel like it was very on brand. They're known for having a lot of politically active people in terms of advocating for different things that they believe. I know in their school systems, a lot of the times there are walkouts and just a lot of concern and a lot of voices regarding political matters.
I don't think I have anything else on the neighborhoods unless you do.
I do. So I actually went and looked up some of these places that she put in there because I was so curious. I was like, I gotta know, are they actually there? Or are they not actually there? Because her descriptions of the neighborhoods were so spot on that I just had to investigate. You can't not investigate. That's a double negative, but still. And Poor Phil's, which is one of the restaurants that they said was across the street from their restaurant, is actually there in Oak Park. I looked to see if there was a Sullivan's because I wanted to see if their restaurant was like based on a true restaurant, but it's not. The closest thing I found was a restaurant called O'Sullivan's in Forest Park, which is right next door to Oak Park. A couple other restaurants they mentioned Au Cheval, which is a burger restaurant in the city. It's like one of the big ones that everybody knows about. It's supposed to have like the best burgers in the city. They also mentioned another one called Cafe Cancale. I feel like I'm probably mispronouncing that. It was the French one towards the end of the book. And that one closed down during COVID when I looked it up.
I think it would be kind of fun to go and see these places.
I agree. I think it'd be fun to just do a little tour. Go all the places.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I like food and I like eating different things. So I think this book was right up my alley that way. I mean, it was mainly kind of like a character-based family drama type situation, but I'll take any little snippets about food that it will give me.
So overall, what was your impression of the book? Did you like it? Did you not like it? How did you feel?
I really liked it. I listened to it on audio. Narrator great. I had no problems, which I feel like is always a gamble sometimes. You never know how that's going to work. And I think the book was relatively long on audio. It's not super long, but long enough that like if the person's voice didn't vibe with you, you may want to not go that route. So I'm glad that that worked out. And I liked the characters. They were all like kind of a mess in their own way.
Oh, 100%. I feel like this was a book filled with very messy people.
How did you like it? Because I know you tend to pick books that are more plot driven. And when you read character books, you're like, oh, I want them to be really well done.
Honestly, I liked it. I don't think it was like one of my favorite books. Like, I don't think it'd be one I'm racing to pick up again. But also it was one that I was not like dreading getting through. I think the thing that really got me, but this is like a personal issue. The thing that really got me was it bothered me how much they talked about the sports and the Cubs because I'm not a sports person. But that's like the Midwestern way is to talk about sports all the time. So it very much fit the book. I just didn't like it.
So for those of you who don't know, I feel like the whole story starts off and is kind of centered around these grandparents, and the grandfather dies during the season that the Cubs won the World Series. And I feel like it's always somehow getting tied back into the Cubs and how the Cubs are doing and that kind of thing. I think like you, like, I didn't really care about that part, but it didn't bother me.
I feel like it was written for a Midwestern audience. But even in the small details, they would put it in. Like, for example, at the end of the book, they were talking about one of the kids, the young kids. It was Jane's child, Lauren, I want to say her name was. And they were talking about her, like, playing with her dolls. And first she was playing, essentially, restaurant. And then afterwards, she was making her toys complain about the Cubs. And I was like, they literally tied it into all of the things. Like, it was a very funny moment for me. I thought it was very clever and very funny. But I was also like, okay, I've had enough of the Cubs. I don't need her dolls to be talking about them.
That is kind of funny. I guess I just kind of just, not necessarily zoned out during those parts, but just kind of like, okay, that happened. Like, now where's the juicy bit with, like, the family drama?
Yes. It definitely contributed to the vibe of the book, though. I will say that. Like, it definitely made it feel very Midwestern. It was good. So, of the characters, do you have a character that's your favorite?
I don't know if I have a favorite. I feel like they're all interesting to talk about because, like you said, they're all very messy. And they're all messy in a different way. So, I think we could pick any one of them to start with. The three that the story centers around are Gretchen, Jane, and Teddy. Teddy's kind of, I feel like he kind of wants to take over the restaurant, but like the aunt and or uncle, whoever's like, who is above him in generations, like, I don't know if he's really on board. So there's all that. And I'm just rambling. So is there one you want to start with?
I feel like we should just start with Teddy because we already started on his backstory where he's like, he kind of wants to take over the restaurant, but also he doesn't want to run it the way it's currently being run. Like, he has all of these big city ideas, and this is very much like a hometown restaurant.
Well, Teddy is a bit messy because he has dreams about what he wants in terms of restaurant stuff, but then also he has a half-sister named Riley, and at some point during the book, he essentially becomes a surrogate parent to Riley, where, like, there's no formal, like, termination of parental rights or any sort of thing like that, but Riley's just essentially moves in, and her mother's like, okay, whatever. I don't really want her. There was a line that made me really sad when Teddy was like, nobody really wants her, but I'm gonna take her and not let her know that.
Yeah. I feel like it definitely shows that their family was so close. But also it was very difficult because, like, Teddy, I don't think was ready to step into a parental role. And I think Riley's mom, Dina, I think was her name, she was just having such a hard time parenting Riley that she just needed a break.
I admire Teddy in a way for, like, stepping up, being like, your family, I'm going to take care of you. I don't know. I feel like there's something about him being like, you know, I not ready for this, but also being like, I'm never going to let you know that, not in like a secret hidden way, but in a way of like, he doesn't want to make her feel unwanted. But then also like, I feel like Teddy's out there and he wants to like live his best life. And like, from what I got that it mentioned in the story is like, he wants to go out there and date. He did have like this semi-brief, and by that I mean like, I think it was like 2 months or something, affair with his ex who's going to get married slash was married. So that's another Teddy issue.
I feel like for Teddy, I had really mixed feelings about him because I was like, generally speaking as a person, I really liked him until that whole thing with his ex came about. And he was like, I'm going to continue seeing this ex even though I know he's getting married. Because first off, it made me really sad for Teddy because you deserve better than that. And then second off, it made me really sad for his ex's fiance because it's like, the ex's fiance also deserves better than that. And then third, it made me sad for Riley because Teddy would just leave her with Gretchen all the time and just be like, oh, I have an emergency, when really it was just that he wanted to go and see his ex. And to me, I felt like that really bothered me, that he was constantly giving Riley to Gretchen to watch so that he could go and see his ex.
For me, I was also sad in the way of, it kind of indicated how it seemed like he didn't really have that much self-esteem, at least in that regard, in terms of like, oh, like, who's out there? Who's going to be interested in me? And I feel like it was almost like a, oh, well, Walter still wants to see me and like, who else is out there? So I guess I'll go do it. Or like, kind of almost still wanting Walter to like him, even though he was also like, Walter is pretentious and doesn't like the things I like, because he kept talking about how Walter doesn't care about food and stuff like that. I'm like, Teddy, why do you even want to be with him then?
I feel like it ties back into his self-esteem issue, where he felt that Walter was the best that he could get. You know what I mean? Where he's like, I don't think I'm going to find someone else who will love me the way I am other than Walter. Even though I don't even like Walter that much, he's the best I'm going to get and I don't want to be alone.
Which I feel like a lot of people have that fear. Some people don't care. Some people are out there living their best lives, single, doing their thing. But I think a lot of people are like, especially if they're like Teddy and in a relationship, but they don't quite like the person anymore, where they're like, well, at least I have that person.
Yeah, like I feel like there gets to be a level of like complacency where you're just like, well, I'm not happy, but I'm not unhappy, so I guess it's fine.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, he really did pass her off to Gretchen a lot. And then when Gretchen kind of made a mistake, and I feel like, you know, Gretchen had she's kind of like a stunted adult.
Yeah.
But then he got all mad about what Gretchen did. And I was like, well, you're the one not taking care of Riley.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, well, this would not have happened in the first place if you had been taking care of Riley the way you said you were going to take care of Riley. But instead, you said, I can take care of Riley. And then half the time you're calling Ubers for her to get to school so you can see your ex. Which also, side note, what does Teddy even do for a living aside from working at the restaurant? Because like, I feel like he had all the free time in the world. He was just like, I can see you at 9 a.m. I can see you at 3 p.m. And I was like, is it just that you don't need to go to the restaurant? Like, the money just comes to you from the restaurant? I don't know. I'm confused.
I couldn't quite tell if he was management and like just filled in at the restaurant as needed, or if he was in a role where you actually had to be there, because I feel like you said he was just off doing whatever he wanted half the time.
Yeah, which is why I was like, what is his actual job?
Also, for anybody listening, I have zero restaurant experience, so I don't really know how they're run. But to me, unless he was like ownership or like upper management, I feel like you can't just peace out all the time. But also, I do know they're kind of irregular schedules, so like maybe just conveniently his shifts changes and then that's why he's available at all these different times. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I used to bus tables when I was in high school and I think maybe college as well. But I used to bus tables and my management was always there pretty much until I walked out the door. Like, they were there all the time. And I would leave at like 2 a.m. sometimes, which is not legally, I don't think they're allowed to do that if you're a minor, but it's in the past. Maybe laws were different. Who knows?
It's not like, what, 1800s, like, what was that thing? The Jungle Book or something? You know the thing by Upton Sinclair about, like, child labor in the meat factories or something? No?
I don't think that was the Jungle Book. I think that was something else. Because I think the Jungle Book was by, like, Rudyard Kipling.
Well, okay, I know there's, like, the Jungle Book that's, like, the person running around in the jungle. But there's something with a very similar title that is about, like, child labor in meat factories. In, like, the 1800s.
I think I know which one you're talking about. I think it took place in Chicago. So this is a very relevant conversation.
Okay. So I have the right idea. Maybe not the right name of the book.
I think that's where we're at. Yeah, I think it's the right idea. Wrong title.
It's fine.
But anyways, where were we?
Teddy and how he doesn't go to work.
Oh, yeah. Teddy and how he doesn't go to work. Like, I feel like Jane... I could be like, yeah, I see her going to work.
I was going to say, Jane, I feel like she was kind of like part-time in the restaurant, did the books kind of thing. So like she wasn't someone who was supposed to be there all the time.
Exactly. Like I feel like Jane was there part-time for the books or part-time just to help out as needed. And it was not like a necessarily need to be there, but more like a, oh, I like to be here to see you all.
Yeah, whereas Teddy is like, oh, his job is in the restaurant industry. Oh. Like, majority of the scenes, he's running off to find Walter.
Yeah, it was kind of strange. But generally speaking, I feel like I do like Teddy, but I feel like he's definitely got some issues.
I feel like I'm being very harsh on him, but there was something that was kind of endearing about him. Like, I feel like he did. Here's my thing with Teddy, though, is I feel like he was kind of like the pouring from an empty cup type situation. Where he, like, he kept wanting to help his other family members, and I kept thinking, Teddy, take care of yourself. You're not as put together as you think you are.
I feel like we saw that in each of the characters, which I think is why the book was named Marrying the Ketchups, is because she had this scene where she was, I think it was Jane, right? And she was talking about how you would take an old ketchup bottle that has just a little bit left, and you would put it into the new ketchup bottle. So you would marry the ketchup so the ketchup wouldn't go to waste. But I feel like in all of these characters in different respects, they were giving more than they personally could handle, and it was causing a lot of issues in their own lives.
And I think it's totally understandable with families. I feel like, assuming like you get along with your family, I think like you want to help those people. And I think part of becoming an adult and managing all this is realizing where to draw the line.
Definitely, because I think that if you're pouring from an empty cup, like you said, there's going to come a point where it's going to actually be detrimental to you and to people in your life, because you're not going to have anything more that you're able to give. And then when you actually really need to be helping someone, you're not going to be able to do it because you'll be so frazzled and so out of sorts.
I think also kind of realizing, yes, you want to help someone, but acknowledging when it's their problem and not yours to fix.
So of the other characters, which one do you want to talk about next? Jane or Ooh. Gretchen?
I don't know. I'm kind of feeling Jane.
I knew you were going to say that. I was like, I bet you she's going to pick Jane because she resonates more with Jane.
Oh, I didn't even think of it that way. I was just thinking, like, Gretchen, I feel like... all I really have to say about her is she's like that line when she was saying, oh, when I was looking around for the adults and then I realized it was me. Which I'm like, I feel like we all felt that, but also I feel like, not to be judgmental, but she's like more of an adult than we are. So I feel like she should have come to that realization already.
I feel like sometimes, though, I still do feel that way. Like how Gretchen's looking around the room and she's like, where's the adult? And she's like, oh, it's me. Oops.
Well, I guess now we're talking about Gretchen, but...
Yes, but we did want to talk about Jane, so let's talk about Jane. So what do you think about her relationship with Mike?
I mean, I'm glad she got rid of him.
I agree. I just feel like he was just really toxic. And I feel like he didn't want to even put in the effort to their relationship. Like, she was always giving, giving, giving. And then when she would give a solution, he would be like, I don't like that solution. So you're the one to blame because I don't like that solution. Like, the whole thing with taking the kids to the restaurant with her or not taking them with her. And she was like, either way, like, the solution you want to do is not going to work out. The one that I want to do actually will work.
Also, I think his emotional IQ is not very high, because I think it was the first therapy meeting they went to after he moved out or something like that. And their whole thing was like, they would go to P.F. Chang's after their like couples therapy. And this is when, like, when he moves out and she's pretty much like, yeah, we're getting a divorce because you are not, you know, pulling your weight in this relationship. And after that meeting, he's just like, so you want to go to P.F. Chang still?
Yeah, I just look at it and I'm like, I feel like he had a lot of growing up to do and he just could not read the room. I feel like that was my biggest thing, was I feel like he just had a lot of growing up to do because he was like cheating on his wife, which, spoiler for those of you who are listening, I'm sorry, I spoiled it for you. He also just seemed like he did not really care that he wasn't going to see his kids that much. Like, it kind of seemed like the kids were almost like an inconvenience to him. And he was like, I want to go and live this young lifestyle and like have an apartment in the city. And like, oh, but you can keep the house and you can keep the kids. So essentially, you can keep all the responsibilities from our old life together. That just, to me, was just wrong. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I look at situations like that where it's like, if there's a divorce like that, and the woman has to have all of the responsibilities of both parents or what both parents had before, like, that's why I don't want to have kids.
Well, I don't know too much about it, but I know there's that whole term called the second shift, where if both couples are working, and I think the assumption in that whole model is that it's a heterosexual couple, but if you're both working, you work your 8 hours, but then when you come back, like, you know, the stereotypical, like, the guy sits on the couch watching the football game or something while the wife is cooking, cleaning, feeding the kids, putting them to bed, that whole type thing. And I feel like that is what Mike and Jane's relationship seemed to be like.
Oh, I 100% agree. And I think also, like, the fact that he wasn't going to compromise, he was like, I have to go to CrossFit. I'm not going to take care of the kids. I have to go to CrossFit. And that was what was creating like a scheduling issue. I'm like, no, you're a parent first. You should be taking care of your kids.
I think also there's something to, when you become a parent, keeping something for you. But I think if he was more willing to give in other areas, then Jane might have been more willing during the CrossFit time to be like, okay, yes, I'll do this. This is your time for you. I will take that time, versus like, you're always off doing whatever. Also, she's hunting around to special grocery stores to get him his special like diet food. Like, I feel like he just didn't appreciate any of it.
No, I feel like he really didn't. And I think that that was like one of the big issues that I had. And I also feel like after she had that like final decision of like, we're getting a divorce, and then afterwards she turned very like no nonsense, I feel like it was interesting because she went through the world not as how society sees women to be anymore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if she was like, I grabbed these two avocados from the sale bin and you're not giving me the sale because they're two different avocados. She was like, well, it was you. Your produce is the one that's messed up. It's not me. I grabbed the two from the bin.
Okay. When that whole scenario went down, I was like, one, go Jane. And two, if that was me, I would have just been like, oh, okay, I guess I'll pay the two avocado price.
Yeah, I know. And I'm like, but that's because I feel like a lot of the times it's like, that's what's expected of you, right? Like, that's what's socially expected of you. And so I very much appreciated when she had that break and she was like, no, I'm going to stand up for myself, because clearly if I don't, nobody will.
I also appreciated, it was slightly humorous, I think it's towards the middle of the end of the book, when Jane moved to Oak Park, and there was some sort of scene where she was, maybe it was around the avocado scene, but there's a scene where Jane was like, oh, now I ask myself, what would Mike do? Kind of like, what would Jesus do, but the opposite. And she was like, oh, if this would anger Mike, it means I'm doing the right thing. And I just thought that was hilarious.
Oh, I 100% agree. I thought that was so funny. I was like, oh, this is the next level of petty.
Because I remember when she brought, I think, Warren? Is that the daughter's name?
Yes.
When she brought Lauren to her new classroom, she's like, oh, it wasn't 95% white. And then she goes, that would anger Mike a lot. So I knew I did the right thing.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, I feel like Oak Park, while it's definitely somewhat diverse, it's still not incredibly diverse. Like, there's still a lot of white people in Oak Park. I'm just saying.
I've never been. I would not know, but I feel like with Jane, there's a lot of character growth there.
I agree, and I feel like I appreciated that. Also, to circle back to my comment that I said before about, like, not wanting kids because of the whole second shift thing, that's just a general statement. Please note that that's not a knock against anyone in my life, just generally speaking, because I don't want it to come off that way.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine. What I'm interested in is you said I would want to talk about Jane because I relate the most to Jane. So I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
I feel like you relate the most to Jane because she's this person who's like always doing all the right things. Like she's like the model child. So like that's why I was like, oh, Leon totally relates to Jane because I could totally see this where Leon's like, I have to do this thing because it's the right thing to do. And so I'm going to do it this way.
Fair. And to go back to the avocado type thing, I haven't quite gotten to the point where I will, like, argue with the cashier about the avocado sale. But I do think over the years I have become more assertive about things, hopefully.
I feel like that's also part of growing up, too, though, is when you're younger, it's more like, I will avoid conflict at all costs. And when you're older, it's like, well, what's actually going to solve the problem that I'm facing?
And I think it's also, you know, kind of like a pick and choose your battles. I think maybe for Jane, that was an exercise where she could practice these skills. Whereas for me, I'd be like, it's like 60 cents. I don't really care.
Exactly.
So I think out of kind of the main characters, it leaves Gretchen, who was living her best life doing a, I think, 90s cover band in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what was the name? Is like something about Donna Summers never graduates or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was something like that, where it was like something about a school.
Yeah. So basically, Gretchen had a trash boyfriend. And I think the two band members like cheated on her, but like together. And so she peaced out to go back to Chicago.
Yeah, which I was like, good for you, Gretchen. I'm glad you went back to Chicago. I'm glad you left your boyfriend who was cheating on you because that's not okay behavior.
It was very fast, though. Like, it just happens. And then I think, like, the neighbor, the friend shows up and Gretchen's apartment's all packed and she left. And I'm like, logistically, can you do it that fast?
I feel like I was less worried about it when Gretchen did it than when Jane moved. Because I feel like for Jane, I was like, oh my gosh, she probably has this big house because Lake Forest is like the land of McMansions, you know? So I was like, I'm sure she's got like all of this stuff. And I was like, oh man. But I feel like for Gretchen, I wasn't quite as worried because it was like she was kind of by herself. Like, I think she had her roommate Gwen. But aside from that, she was pretty much like by herself. And we all know that New York apartments are like little shoeboxes. They're so small.
I guess I was thinking, well, maybe she just didn't bring anything with her. But I was like, moving van, rent, this, that, utilities, blah, 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 blah. But I guess a lot of that she could have canceled once she got to Chicago.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think logistically, she probably just brought her clothes and a couple of like important belongings. And I wouldn't be surprised if she left the rest behind and was just like, I'm just done with this city.
As a side note, I am now looking at Lake Forest homes because you told me they were McMansions. These things are massive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like a normal, like, you could get a home that's like a thousand. This thing
looks like a hotel. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
So Lake Forest is like one of the bougie, super rich areas in Illinois, and then also Hinsdale. So if you look at either one of those two places, you're going to see like a ton of McMansions. It's just going to be like, big home, big home, big home. At one point, when I was teaching art, I interviewed for a position in Lake Forest. And let me tell you about this interview process because I think I already told you about this interview process, but I don't think I told the podcast world about this interview podcast. Interview podcast? interview, process. That's what I meant. So what happened was I interviewed for an art position there because I was like, I can teach art. Lake Forest probably pays a good wage for an art teacher. I should just apply. Why not? And so I applied for this position in Lake Forest. And first off, they wanted an animation teacher. I know absolutely nothing about animation. So I was like, oh no. That was when I knew the interview was not going to go well. And then afterwards, or during the interview, there was also like two children on the panel interviewing you, which I'm like, I feel like I don't absolutely hate it, but it did feel like a very strange power dynamic. Cause it was like the people who I'm supposed to be in charge of, if in theory I went to go work there, are the ones interviewing me. So it was just a little strange because I feel like if it's like with adults, it's not as weird. Like, oh, if you're going to be a manager for some people, like you want to make sure their personality works well with them. That makes sense. But for the kids, it just felt like a little strange. Not that I hated it. I just felt like it maybe could have been done like a slightly different way. So I don't know. It was a little odd. Yeah, you should. Oh my gosh, Leon, you should go and you should look up their school. Look up like Lake Forest High School.
Okay.
And just like, take a peek at some of the images.
Oh.
Uh-huh. It looks like a college. It's so incredibly fancy. Not to mention, too, like, this place is right by the lake, I think. So they probably have, like, beaches and stuff there, I would assume. I don't really know because I've never been, but I would assume they have beaches and stuff.
Yeah, it looks very fancy. And this is the public school.
It is the public school. I'm sure they pay a boatload in taxes. But yes, this is the public school.
Okay, because here it looks like what I am familiar with as a private prep school.
Yes. So this is the thing about many of these schools, at least I can speak on Illinois, at least in Illinois, where you have a couple of areas that are ultra wealthy and their schools look like they could be private schools. They have every resource available to them. I would say that Oak Park schools, probably very similar to this. So I know that she was talking about like, oh, I'm moving to this place that's like so different from Lake Forest. And I'm like, kind of, but not really. Because there's still a lot of wealth.
Fair. If we're comparing high school to high school and I'm looking at the right thing, it doesn't look as fancy. It looks more like a public high school.
I'm sure it does. I think they also have quite a few amenities, though, that a normal public high school would not have. It reminds me of, like, a little bit ago, I think I saw a video showing Carmel, Indiana's high school, and it was, like, super, super fancy. The Oak Park High School, I think, has, like, first, they have a makerspace where you can make buttons and other fun things in their library. And then they also have, like, a podcast studio and a music recording room.
Okay, yeah, not your average school.
Not your average school, right? So these are the kinds of things that are present in some of the schools in Illinois, where it's just like, this is crazy. And I'm sure it's not just Illinois. I'm sure there are other places in the country that also are like this. But yeah, you can definitely tell class gaps based on where you are and the high schools in Illinois.
Well, thank you for joining us on our real estate tangent. We hope you enjoyed the time to look up these houses for yourself because they're quite nice to look at and probably quite nice to live in.
It's an estate. That's all I can say.
I did notice you had a note about an angry car ride. Can you remind me about the angry car ride?
Oh, I think that was like when Jane and Mike were going to travel somewhere and do something together. And then she ends up just going off on him in this car ride. And then she's like, I don't even want to be here. Just take me home.
Okay, I think it was when they were trying to discuss like what to do with the kids when Mike moved out or Mike had just moved out or something. And how she thought, oh, it'd be better for us to do it in public. But then she realized she lived in a kind of small place where everyone in public would like know them or something.
Yeah. I feel like that was kind of like her breaking point where she was just like, and I'm going to have to look out for myself because nobody else will. I also really liked the more subtle feminist undercurrent in this book, although also kind of not feminist because she was always trying to tear down Miriam. But like, aside from the tearing down Miriam, I feel like there was a lot of good points where it was like, you need to be the one to advocate for yourself. And I think that it really showed a lot of areas in which, especially in Jane's relationship with Mike, in which women are expected to take on additional responsibilities.
I think she obviously was going after Miriam, but I also think it gave a more realistic portrayal than if Jane was like, right off the bat, she just found out about the affair and her first response is, well, Mike's a person too and he has choices, because I think your first instinct is just blame the other person. And I think she also took a minute to recognize that, because I think at some point Gretchen was like, maybe this isn't productive. And she's like, I know, but it's what I need to do right now.
Yeah, it's like, this is how I need to grieve at the moment.
Would you like to talk about any of the other characters we haven't mentioned as much?
With Gretchen, I know that we kind of talked about her.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot Gretchen.
We were talking about her for a second there, and then we went down the rabbit hole. I feel like with Gretchen, once she got back to Chicago, I feel like her storyline was not as strong as the other two for me.
I agree. I feel like there wasn't much going on with Gretchen. It was just a lot of the, I don't feel like an adult. I don't know what to do. I'll never play music again. You know, like, on repeat.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of how it was. And I feel like a lot of it too was she was always seeing other people look down on her like, oh, you'll never amount to anything, which I think was really hard.
Her friends sound kind of awful.
Oh my gosh, yeah, when they were talking about her and making fun of her like right in front of her face, I was like, I would just leave. Like, I would block your numbers. You would be out of my life.
Also, these are people that they were friends like in high school. Like, you're 30 something now. You don't have to keep seeing them if you don't like them.
Yeah, I feel like there was that one friend that she actually liked and the other two were just like super mean.
Yeah, there was that one that she actually did like. You're right. I forgot about her. I agree. Maybe she just wasn't as well developed.
I think that Jane and Teddy definitely stood out a little bit more compared to Gretchen. I think also, though, it didn't really click for me, and it might have been because I was reading the book kind of fast. It didn't really click for me that Gretchen was letting Riley hang out in the restaurant with her friend after hours until, like, the video situation came out. I was like, oh, she's just downstairs. And in the back of my head, this is legitimately what I thought. Wow, she must be really really rich if she can afford a two-story place. That was legitimately what I thought.
You didn't put it together? I mean, it does say she lives above the restaurant, I think.
Apparently, I was just like, oh, she must be doing pretty well if she can have two floors. I was like, oh, wait, 2020 hindsight, that was not what was happening. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Gretchen was ready to watch Riley either. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't either. I think also, though, because what it made it sound like in the book was that Riley and her friend were just downstairs, like, chatting. Like, I didn't immediately pick up on anything being wrong until after the video came out. And then people were blowing up Gretchen's phone. Did you catch anything before it, like, actually came out and be like, something might be wrong with this?
I don't think so. I think, I know she said, oh, my friend's coming over. And I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I had some other point about Gretchen, Riley, downstairs. I don't know. But also, I guess I just really don't want to talk about Gretchen. But Jane, how Jane just got, like, a boyfriend. Like, it seemed like right away. And the whole family was like, cool, good for you, Jane.
I feel like they honestly probably didn't like Mike that much, but also did not have the heart to tell her that. Because they were like, you're part of our family, we want to support you, etc.
Okay. I will return to Gretchen, because one of my favorite moments was when she was on the speed date and the guy was like, I don't like cheese. And then Gretchen was like, okay, this is done.
Yeah, she was like, oh, this is a hard pass. This is deal breaker.
And then later in the book, she like hooks up with the brewery guy and she was like, oh, I don't know. Because like, I feel like he's perfectly nice, but he was like, Gretchen's like, I can't date a Bryce. But then she was like, well, he likes cheese, so that's a plus.
Okay, But I feel like secretly they were kind of perfect for each other, her and this Bryce guy, because later in the book, like towards the very end of the book, I think it was her who was saying something really enthusiastically about the weather. And she specifically made a comment like, oh, I could never date one of those boys next door because they're always so like Wisconsin talking about the weather. And I was like, that is literally you right now, Gretchen. What are you talking about?
I also thought it was interesting how she seemed like she wasn't quite an adult. Oh, that's what I was going to say earlier. I guess these are two points. One, since we're connecting it with the brewery guy, how she was looking down on him because he had custom Star Wars sheets. But then also she was very much like, I don't feel like an adult. And I'm like, I don't think you can judge this guy for Star Wars sheets.
I agree. Also, until she had her little like monologue at the end of the book about not feeling like an adult, it didn't really click in my mind that she was not adulting. And I was like, oh, I probably should have picked up on this sooner. Maybe I should look closely at my own life and make sure that I'm not doing any of these things.
I mean, I think it's very easy to do some of those things and not realize you're doing them. Because like when she was talking about how she didn't realize how much she relied on her family.
Yeah.
So I guess she did have some growth at the end. But to the other point I was going to make and kind of related to Riley in the video, I feel like Teddy had a good point when he confronts Gretchen about it. And Gretchen's like, well, I told her to go tell somebody. And then Teddy's like, she did. She told you. And you're an adult, so you have to deal with it.
Exactly. And if you don't know how to deal with it, you reach out to somebody else and you're like, how do I deal with this? And then you work through it together. Like, I feel like if somebody came to me with that information, I would have been like, and we're reporting this to the police. That would have been my first thing. I would have been like, we're reporting this to the police. We're getting it documented.
Yeah. I mean, I think she definitely kind of punted the issue, which wasn't great because I don't think Riley would necessarily want to tell a million different people. Like, she picked one person for whatever reason. It was like, I will tell you. Also, would you really want to have your half-brother be the first person you tell about this type of thing?
No, I think even as sensitive as Teddy might be, I think it still would have been really awkward for her to go and tell him first. Because I don't know. I mean, I look at it and I'm like, if something like that happened to me, my first instinct would be to tell a woman in my life. Because I think a lot of the times things like this get brushed off if you go and you tell someone who might not believe you.
Yeah, I think it's a very sensitive issue in who you picked. And luckily, it seems like Riley's going to turn out okay. But I don't know. I feel like it could have gone really wrong.
Definitely.
I mean, it didn't go great because Gretchen didn't do anything and the video came out.
I also look at it, though, and circling back to Gretchen, I feel like, did she really have that much growth at the end, though? Because when she went to go and get her own place, it wasn't even with her own money. She was like, I'm going to take this inheritance I got and use it to get an apartment. But at least she did get a job.
I mean, I think a lot of people use that because of house prices. Like, it's the only way you can do it. I think, at least in this way, she's not living for free above the restaurant.
That's true.
She had to give up that money. Like, she doesn't have it sitting. Imagine if she got the inheritance and stayed living for free above the restaurant.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess that's fair. But it also sounded like it was renting, not like buying a place, which is why I was like, granted, everyone's financial situations are different. And if she's just moved back from New York, like I could see where like, yeah, she might not have the money to go and rent a place yet. But I did think it was like kind of odd too, because I don't know, like when people ask about renting in your area, I'm not sure if it's the same as like where I live, but they'll ask for like your pay stubs. They'll be like, what are your pay stubs? And you can't just be like, I have X amount of inheritance and I'm going to rent your apartment.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe if those people saw the inheritance, it depends on how big it is. And they're like, okay, that covers it for like a year or two or three. I don't know. I'm not a landlord.
I don't know either. Like, I think that would be a good question to note. And I think it's also like a question of like, for example, like, I wonder what people do when they're retired and they're going to like, if they decide they want to rent a place, like, do you show them like, this is my Social Security money that I have coming in? Like, how does one finagle this? Anyways, so overall, Would you recommend this book to someone else?
Yeah, I think I would. I liked it. I think it's very easy listening in terms of the audiobook. So maybe if you had a long trip, I think it would be very good in that scenario because it's not super plot heavy. So it's like you don't have to worry about missing something and having the story not make sense.
I agree. It felt like a soap opera and I was here for it.
Okay. I know whenever they do adaptations, they never live up, but I could see this attempting to be made for TV or like movies or something because it very much has what you said, that kind of soap opera-y vibe.
It does. But I really like that. Like, I think it was nice because it was like a slower paced book, but it was definitely like things were still happening.
Yeah. I know. I think the last book we read was kind of mainly character based. I know she was trying to publish the book, but this one felt completely different. Like you were saying at the beginning, I wasn't sitting here thinking like, oh, I have to pick up this book again. Like I thought it was relatively easy to pick it back up.
I agree. And I feel like it was just one of those where it's like you can put it down, you can pick it back up after a week or two and it's not gonna completely throw you off.
Yeah. So overall, I'd recommend it.
I agree. Well, thank you for joining us. Our next book club is going to be After Parties by Anthony Vesna Snow, and that will be dropping on May 1st.
We hope you enjoyed our book club discussion on Marrying the Ketchups by Jennifer Close. And if you have any thoughts about the books, we would love to hear from you. So you can send us an email to zillennialspodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram @zillennialspodcast. And don't forget to rate and review Zillennials Podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.